Welcome to episode 31 of 10-0, because, you know, we're big kids now.
Yay!
Ish. Depends on the day.
I mean, we've only been doing this since, what, May?
Sure. Something like that.
I think.
How are we doing?
Yeah. Aside from me, you know, coughing so hard it made you, you know, question your life choices and being my friend.
Are you going to kill me? No? Okay. We're cool.
No, just myself. It's fine.
Rude.
Oh, man.
I do not want another partner at work.
Well,
no.
Things keep going the way they're going. Just saying.
Shut the fuck up. No.
8 months from now, you will have someone for at least 6 weeks.
That's acceptable. I can deal with that. Permanently?
Hold Only on. Because you know that I'm going to come, like, bug the fuck out of you guys. I'm just gonna be like, I'm fucking bored.
Just means I get baby snuggles.
Just let me work, please. Just let me go on the radio one time. Just one. Well, we made it 31 episodes.
That's an accomplishment in and of itself.
And I have to go back 31 weeks and see. Like 2 seconds. Because I want to see what day our first episode aired.
I think it was May 14th. Because I just went through all our episodes and logged everything.
Well, I did too, but, you know, I didn't log it, but I went through all of them.
I shouldn't say I logged it. See. I have a list of topics that we did and when we did it.
Right. Let's see. Yeah, May 14th. So, This episode, 7 months.
4 days short of 8. Comes out on the 10th.
Jesus.
But anyway.
8 months. Of doing notes in my spare time.
Mm-hmm. And panicking when we don't get them done in time.
And panicking to the point where I have even done my notes while she is recording her part. Because I'm like, oh god, we need to get this episode done. It releases tomorrow.
Fuck.
Oh god. Anyways.
So, our true crime fact of the day. 2 days prior to today, I guess. December 8th of 1963, Frank Sinatra Jr. is kidnapped from Lake Tahoe. Yeah. I didn't know this was a thing. Bye.
How did Dustin make it longer than Julie?
I don't know.
Oh, wait. Never mind. Guarantee you they're all having coffee.
Probably. Sinatra was taken at gunpoint from his hotel room at Harrah's Casino. He was allowed to speak to his father. And would... And so it begins.
Get it together.
And would... Which point, God bless America, the kidnappers demanded $240,000 in ransom. Barry Keenan, who was the leader of the scheme, also considered sons of Bob Hope and Bing Crosby.
So we're going after famous people.
Yeah. The kidnapping was originally scheduled for November, but was delayed by Kennedy's assassination. Immediately following the abduction, Frank Sr. received offers for help from the Attorney General, who was Robert Kennedy at the time, and Sam Giancana.
Oh.
I feel like it's a very Italian name, and I'm already fucking it up, so that's fine. Frank Sr. declined their help and accepted help from the FBI. On December 10th, the kidnappers advised of the drop point for the money and said that Frank Jr. could be found on Mulholland Drive in L.A. In an attempt to avoid a public scene, law enforcement picked up Frank Jr. and brought him home in the trunk of their car. Pissed. If I was rescued from being kidnapped and
forced into the trunk of
the car, I would be pissed. Within days, John Irwin, who was Keenan's partner, turned himself into the San Diego FBI office and confessed, And by December 14th, the entire group had been located and arrested.
I'm not that ballsy. No.
I mean, to do it in the 60s, maybe. Okay. Today, absolutely fucking not.
No. Because, did you know that there's such thing as a geo warrant? And you can get, like, cell phone pings?
Oh, yeah.
Within a certain, radius of a location?
Yeah.
And it can tell you exactly, who was there?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I had no fucking idea that it was, the more you know.
The more you know. Said with a SpongeBob rainbow man. You want to go first or you want me to go first?
Well.
You went first last time.
It's up to you.
Okay.
Mine's kind of short.
Well, mine is kind of short, but it's also a...
And it's kind of stemming from, the TikTok thing.
Well, I'll go first.
Okay, then.
Because mine's kind of... Fucky. Trigger warning in advance. This does involve children.
Why was I choosing stuff that involves children lately?
Well, because I read this book and it was fucky. So, the book I read was If You Tell by Greg Olson.
Okay.
It's about Philly No-Tech and the abuse/murders of three people. And her two daughters. Three daughters. It's very sadistic and graphic. So fair warning. Live with her father in Battleground, Washington. In 1967, Shelley's father, Les, received a call from the LA County Sheriff's Office. Okay? Mm-hmm. Her mother, Sharon, had been murdered in a hotel room. The coroner asked Les to come to L.A. to identify her body and pick up their youngest child, Paul.
Okay.
Les went to L.A. to identify Sharon and pick up Paul. The coroner said that she'd been living on Skid Row and had been beaten to death. So what that says to me, a hotel on Skid Row.
Okay.
Cecil.
Uh-huh.
That's what that says. I just put that two and two together. Right there. Right then and there. Neurons connecting. Have we done that? Have we done the Cecil? No, I did a Lisa Lamb, not specifically the Cecil. Anyway, Shelley, who was unable to process her mother's death, tormented her younger brothers. Okay. She resorted to pyromania, theft, and filling all of their shoes with broken glass.
No, thank you.
And so it begins. On family vacations, Shelley's stepmother, Laura, noted that she was not a happy child. She would often throw a fit and even refuse to go on the vacation. Laura noted that Shelley's attitude turned to menacing and vengeful as she got older. If the attention was not on her, she was not happy. Mm-hmm. At 15, Shelley accused her father of raping her. This did not happen. She was at school and was sent to a detention hall when she told everybody what was going on.
Okay.
That wasn't really going on. When she didn't come home after school, her stepmother grew concerned and called the school. They said that she'd been sent to a detention hall and they were not at liberty to discuss the investigation. First off, if you send my child somewhere without telling me and won't tell me...
I mean, I kind of get it.
But if you have my child and you will not tell me where she is...
I understand it, but I don't. I understand it in the sense that it's a pending investigation against the family member. But at the same time, that's not the family member in question, so
right.
Why should it matter?
Right. Les had gone to the detention center to get Shelly, but they would not release her without an examination physically.
Right.
After they'd gone home, Laura went into Shelly's room looking for any kind of evidence. She found a Mac.
You good?
I'm choking on a nut.
That's what she said.
Laura found a magazine with a page marked, "I was raped at 15 by my dad."
Oh.
So that's where she got it. The next day, they took her to the hospital to have an examination. The family doctor did the exam and determined that she was still a virgin, and there was no bruising in or around anything.
Okay.
The doctor released her with one condition, and that was that she get counseling. However, counseling obviously didn't do anything because she's a fucking psychopath. She was adamant that nothing was her fault, and she would never actually admit to lying about the rape allegations.
Of course not.
In 1971, Shelly met her first husband, Randy Rivardo, when she was 17. The two met at their high school. At graduation, Shelly went back to Battleground, and Randy stayed in Pennsylvania. In 1972, Shelly called Randy and asked him to move to Battleground, and that her father would get him a job as a maintenance man at the nursing home that he owned. Of course, he came running. Randy came to Battleground and lived in an apartment provided for free by Les. In February of 1973, Shelly and Randy were married, and they were both only 19 at the time.
Jesus Christ.
After their honeymoon, Shelly and Randy lived in a trailer that was provided for them by Shelly's parents for okay. free. She would often throw a fit because she didn't want to live in a trailer. You know what? She got a goddamn roof over your head.
Entitled bitch.
Oh, just wait. It's about to get better. So one day, she decided that she wanted a brand new Volkswagen Beetle. Okay?
Wanting one hand shit in the other.
Right. She went to her father and asked for the car, and he, of course, said that he would buy it. However, he came back with a used Buick convertible.
Oh.
This upset Shelly, and she threw a temper tantrum. Later that night, she collapsed, heavy air quotes here, due to what Randy thought was an overdose on sleeping pills and alcohol. Spoiler alert. It was not. She was rushed to the hospital where her stomach was pumped, and a very small amount of aspirin was found. There was no evidence of sleeping pills in this woman's system.
Fucking psycho bitch.
No fucking evidence of any kind of drug besides aspirin. Oh, just wait. I have to get better.
Oh, God.
One day, after Randy returned home from his classes at a local college, he found the trailer trashed and a bloody-faced Shelly. She claimed that someone had come into the trailer, raped her, and stole Randy's rifle. Randy immediately called the police and Les. The deputy questioned Shelly and determined that her injuries were self-inflicted. There had never been an intruder in the trailer.
Well, probably not.
She claimed that whoever broke in had stolen the rifle. Yet it was found buried in the yard.
Well. I mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm crazy, but I'm not that crazy.
Right? That's what I said. In 1974, she announced that she was pregnant with her first daughter. Randy's parents said that they wanted to come and see Shelly and Randy and bring the baby presents. Shelly said she did not want them to come, and she locked herself in her bedroom for the entirety of their visit and would not come out.
Uh-huh. Because that's fishy. Or not fishy.
Yeah. But according to Randy, they still had a wonderful time, which made her even more angry. Go throw yourself a pity party somewhere else.
Right.
In February of 1975, Shelley gave birth to her first daughter, Nikki. After Nikki was born, Shelley decided that she would... that Nikki would be best cared for at her father's Vancouver home. Randy and Nikki stayed there for 3 months until Randy decided it was time to go home. When they returned home, Shelley was absolutely fucking hateful to Randy. Absolutely hateful. She would lock him out of the house at night. Right. So he would have to sleep in their car at night. She would also take his paychecks and spend them however she saw fit without any regard for what the family might need. So, diapers, food, nothing, out the window.
I mean, I like to spend money, but everything else comes first.
Right. This, obviously, quickly led to the end of their marriage. Randy left Washington for Pennsylvania. Shortly after their marriage was over, Shelley left Nikki with Laura and Les and took off. She was gone for over a year with no contact with anybody. And then one day, out of the blue, she showed up and took...
Oh.
Yeah. June 2nd of 1978, Shelley became pregnant again and married the father, who was the her neighbor in an apartment building that she was staying at. The couple moved into Shelley's... Right. Into Shelley's grandmother's house. In August of 1978, Shelley gave birth to another girl, Samantha. Danny, who's her husband, was described as a good father, but fought back when Shelley tried to pull her usual shit.
Oh.
This often led to fights, both physical and verbal. This marriage did not last long, obviously. Shelley would often move the girls around from place to place and have them call her new boyfriend's dad. Get bent.
I was going to make a comment, but better not.
Probably not. Jesus.
I do know people like that.
Shelley met her next and final husband, Dave, at the Sore Thumb Bar in Long Beach, Washington.
The Sore Thumb.
Special note. After the day that they met, the bar burned down.
If that's not a fucking...
Shelley and Dave were married on December 28th of 1987. Shortly before they were married, Shelley told Dave that she had cancer.
Lying bitch.
Yeah, she never did. So,
I have cancer, feel sorry for me and marry me.
Right. So, my eye is twitching right now. I'm so irritated. Yeah. So we're going to move on to the abuse.
Okay.
Fair warning. This is not cute. The kids had to ask permission to use the bathroom. If they didn't, they were severely beaten. And showers were also regularly withheld from all the kids. So they would have to go to school full of mean-ass teenage girls. Not clean. Probably having BO.
Probably.
With greasy hair.
My kids can shower whenever they want. But if they're, like, being punished for something, oh, hell yes, they have to ask these about. But it's not an all-the-time thing.
I think that's different because these kids never did anything wrong.
Like,
their mom was just a fucking psychopath.
Like, my kids are sent to their room. There's no bathroom upstairs.
Right.
So they have to literally ask to come downstairs.
Right.
But other than that, my kids have free reign of, like, everything in my house. Aside from food. Because otherwise they would not eat dinner and they would eat every bit of snack food that I have in my house.
So Shelley came up with a punishment technique, I suppose. She liked to call wallowing. This entailed the kids being forced to lay in a puddle of mud outside, no matter what the weather was, naked, and being sprayed down with a hose. Sometimes they would also be put into a dog kennel in this and sprayed with a hose.
No kid deserves that.
No. In 1988, Shelley took in her nephew, Shane. I don't remember if his father was in prison or his mom was in prison. And the other was a drug user. Either or. Shelley would often force Nikki and Shane to dance together naked. Yeah.
So in other words, she almost tortured them as much as Gertrude.
Yeah. Yeah. Nikki was locked in her room for an extended period of time. She would often be locked in the closet of her room. She recounted, and if you tell that she was locked in a closet for the entire summer, the only time she was allowed out of the closet was to empty a bucket that Shelley gave her to use as her restroom.
That's fucking bullshit.
Yeah. So now we're going to move on to the victims.
Okay.
The first was Kathy Loreno. Was 36. Kathy was Shelley's hairstylist and so-called best friend. Shelley invited Kathy to come live with them to basically be a live-in nanny for the two older girls and the baby that Shelley was about to give birth to.
She needed another
one. Right. The abuse started almost as soon as Kathy moved in. According to court documents, Kathy was subjected to severe beating, being dragged across the grounds, hair pulling, and poisoning. To clean her wounds, Shelley would use bleach and salt. Yeah. Kathy was forced to take sedatives and was often starved. And she was forced to live and work outside wearing minimal to no clothing.
So it really was almost like Gertrude and Sylvia all over again.
Yeah. As a result of this abuse, Kathy lost about 100 pounds. Her hair and teeth started to fall out, and she began to decline both physically and mentally, obviously. Towards the end of her life, Kathy could not walk or talk. One side of her face drooped, indicating a stroke, and her vision had declined significantly, and she was often covered in her own vomit. Eventually, she did die as a result of this abuse. At Shelley's command, Dave and Shane burned and buried Kathy's body on the property. In 1994, Kathy's family reported her missing. When the no-techs were interviewed, they said that Kathy had run away with a truck driver and moved to Hawaii. Shelley went as far as to write letters to Kathy's family as though Kathy wrote them, saying that she was okay.
Oh my God.
She always kept to her story that her and Kathy maintained contact. And Shane, Shelley's nephew, took pictures of Kathy's declining health. And he was going to turn them into the police, but he did not make it that far because he's the next victim.
Of course he is.
So Shane Watson, 19. He came to live with the no-techs in 1988. He seemed to disappear shortly after Kathy in 1994. The note text claimed that Shane had run away to Alaska to work as a fisherman. Dave, Shelley's husband, would later admit that he shot Shane in the head with a .22 caliber rifle in 1995.
Oh.
Yeah. Investigators believe that Dave killed Shane because Shelley was angry that he took the pictures documenting the abuse that Kathy had gone through. Dave admitting to burning the bodies of Shane and Kathy and scattering their ashes on the beach.
Damn.
Yeah. The third victim is Ron Woodworth, who was 57. He moved in with the Notex in October of 2001. Neighbors described seeing Ron forced outside in his underwear to do chores.
Jesus.
Oh, just, well. Ron, or they also claimed that Ron was forced to jump off the second floor roof onto the gravel driveway wearing no shoes. Shelley would then clean heavy, heavy fucking air quotes, his feet with boiling water and bleach.
Oof.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not okay.
No. Ron was officially listed as missing in 2003. Dave would later admit to burying him on the property after Shelley told him that Ron had committed suicide. Obviously, he did not commit suicide.
Obviously.
There was a fourth kind of victim, I guess. Okay. I forgot to put him in here, but Shelley was a in-home health aide for him. He died after a fall. But he left his house and all of his assets, what have you, to his dog. And after the dog, he put Shelly. Oh. Put Shelly. Guess what happened to the dog?
The dog died.
Yeah. Shelly and Dave Notek were arrested on August 8th of 2003 after their daughters turned them into the police. Finally and kudos to these kids.
Right.
So out of the trial, the state charged Shelley with 2 counts of second degree murder, 1 for Kathy and Ron.
Okay.
June 18th of 2004, Shelley appeared in court to plead guilty to second degree murder and first degree manslaughter, the first degree manslaughter being for Ron. She entered an Alford plea, which we've talked about before.
Yes.
An Alford plea is defined as this. In the United States, it's a guilty plea in criminal court whereby a defendant in a criminal case does not admit to the criminal act and asserts their innocence. In entering an Alford plea, the defendant admits that the evidence presented by the prosecution would be likely to persuade a judge or jury to find the defendant guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. Alford pleas are legally permissible in almost all U.S. federal and state courts, but are not allowed in Indiana, Michigan, and New Jersey or U.S. Armed Forces courts.
Thank God.
Right. How did I lose my spot?
I don't know. But then again, I've seen how you take notes, so.
Hey. Seen how you take notes.
Yeah.
As paragraph writer.
Well.
August 19th of 2004, Shelley was sentenced to 22 years in prison, 164 months for Kathy's murder, and 102 months for Ron's. In April of 2005, Shelley attempted to withdraw her Alford plea. She said that she'd not been properly informed of the circumstances, and she did not understand the consequences of her plea. The court denied her withdrawal. She was well fucking informed.
Right.
Dave Notek was sentenced to 15 years in prison for the second degree murder of Shane Watson. He was paroled in 2018. Shelley is set to be released in June of 2022.
Yeah, no.
For good fucking behavior.
No, let that bitch fucking rot.
I'm
kind of an asshole, though.
I'm terrified for her children.
I would hope. And pray.
Like, what if she just shows up on their doorstep one day? Because you know that's what's going to happen.
Like I said, I would hope and pray that the kids were smarter and decided that they were going to, change their names and move. And
nope. Because there were many sources that I found that said where they live. Like, the towns that they live in.
Oh, yeah, no. Like, mm-mm. You better believe that I would be moving in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Like I said, that's a short one, but It'll knock your socks off.
Yeah.
How can you do that to your children and people that you call your friend?
You don't.
I don't understand.
Unless you are severely fucked up in the head.
Well, you see what had happened was.
You see what had happened was. Is an excuse. Okay.
Just saying.
Is a good excuse.
I just saying. Next.
Next.
What you got?
So I haven't done a good mythical creature lately.
Okay.
You sent me the TikTok video.
Oh, are you doing hellhounds?
Yes.
Fuck yes.
Okay, so backstory on this whole TikTok video. These guys are recording their like front yard. And this black mass appears on their camera. Like, out of nowhere. Like, it just walks into existence. And you can see the yard around it.
Walks into existence.
As it just walks.
Love it.
And you can see, like, the glowing of the, like, reflection of light against its eyes. As it's looking around this bush in the front yard. And it's, like, sniffing and stuff like a normal dog would do.
However...
until
it almost doesn't have legs, like it's almost just like a black,
like it's almost see-through,
like a black cloud kind of thing, but like it kind of has dog-like movement ish
but then it turns its head and this neck is 3 times longer than a normal dog's neck.
It's a not dog,
right? Instead of a not deer, it's a not dog. We've established that it's not
a dog.
Not a not deer. It's a not dog. So, I just, strangely enough, had to rewatch that video because someone liked my comment on it. Because if you have watched Supernatural, which I would hope most of you have, hellhounds show up when you make a deal with the devil and it's time to collect.
Mm-hmm.
So... my comment was, A, who did you make a deal with? And B, I don't claim any negative energy coming from that video. And so you see it, like, appear out of the darkness behind this truck. And then you see it just kind of, like, disappear the same direction it came, but you never actually see it walk away. You just see it kind of fade to black, and then as soon as it disappears from frame altogether, the light kicks on, like the motion light kicks on, and it was just a really strange video.
It's very eerie.
Can it be debunked? Yes, because it's an older camera. It's not like the HD cameras that we have now,
right?
But it made me think. And, you know, thus I give you my knowledge of hellhounds. Okay, so a hellhound is a monstrous dog leashed to the spirit world. They are nicknamed the bearer of death in some parts of the world because they lurk behind or in the shadows of a person who is doomed to die soon. They can be found guarding the entryways to the afterlife. It all just depends on what region and what lore you want to go with.
Right.
So their physical description, again, varies. But whenever they do get seen, they strike fear into the hearts of all their witnesses. These phantom canines are considerably larger than a normal dog. A small hellhound is about the size of a mastiff, while a large one can dwarf horses and bears.
So it's beaver-sized. Got it.
No, it makes them look small. Jeez. Okay.
He's 132 pounds.
I know.
He's a chunk-a-monk.
Heck. That would be a small one. That makes him look small. Their hair is as black as coal, and their eyes glow like angry red or green flames. The most terrifying individuals may have multiple heads or have no head at all.
No, I'm good.
Spotting a hellhound can be difficult, since they are mostly nocturnal creatures. Yeah. I beg to differ.
Yeah.
I don't fully believe that they are mostly nocturnal, because if it's your time and you made that deal,
bye.
You're gonna go when you're gonna go. Their black hair blends in with the darkness of the night or shadows. But if you keep alert, you might smell sulfur or even notice a trail of scorched ground where his path crosses yours.
No, thank you.
It's even been said that you can smell like brimstone or like charred earth if they're close to you. Despite their ferocious appearance, most hellhounds are more mysterious than hostile. They rarely attack humans unless they're provoked. Even if you wanted to fight one, it would probably run away before you even had time to attack it. Mainly because they are guardians. Basically, they're like an omen. They're not meant to hurt you, but meant to warn you. They might be assigned to guard a treasure or sacred ground, in which case they will spend an eternity glowering over their charge. The beasts will only attack if they are provoked, but if you put one toe too close to their treasure, it might be the last move you ever make. A guardian hellhound.
So you might not retract that toe.
Yeah. A guardian hellhound will never back down or run away from a fight. In a few rare cases, hellhounds have been seen escorting women through the night or escorting souls on their way to the afterlife to protect them from other monsters that might be lurking in the dark. These accounts seem to show that the canines are soft-hearted. However, other rare cases have documented the hounds attacking churches or other religious gatherings, which paints them in a nastier light. I'd like to think that, you know, that sense of, like, dread when you're walking to the car at night is really just one of them, like, lurking in the shadows trying to protect you.
I would like to think that.
But at the same time, no. Like, I'm terrified anyway.
I also know the world is full of creepers, because, yes. You know.
You do not like the dark. Anyways, it's said that they have special abilities, such as different supernatural skills that make them both powerful allies and fearsome enemies. They have incredible speed and strength, even for large predatory animals like themselves. They can outrun a cheetah in a race and rip down trees with their claws. Uh-huh. They also are masters of disguise.
I'm going to be a master.
They can shapeshift into various forms and even vanish into thin air.
Okay.
Which,
I mean, you saw that.
Yeah. So I think what we're going to do is we're going to post the video along with this, if we can figure out how to share it to Facebook.
I should probably ask that person's permission first.
Well, I mean, it is a viral video. If it doesn't get shared, then... But, I mean, we can always ask. In cultures that associate fire with hell, The hounds are also able to play tricks with flames. They will scorch the ground they walk on, and their claws are as hot as flames when they lash out. They are brilliant at dramatic exits and entrances. They can conjure up pillars of fire to transport themselves. That seems a little far-fetched for me.
Yeah.
Overall, the Hellhound's most dreadful ability is his uncanny sense of foredeath. If you see a Hellhound, your odds of denying... I can't type. Your odds of dying in the next year skyrocket. If you see him three times, it's way more likely. It's unclear whether they're merely omens of death or if seeing them actually cause death. Either way, in almost every culture, they are not a welcome sight. In Greek mythology, Hades, the god of the underworld, kept a monstrous hellhound named Cerberus at the mouth of the underworld to prevent dead souls from escaping back into the world above. Cerberus had three with ferocious jaws and eyes, and the tail of a snake. At one point in history, he was captured by Heracles and removed from the underworld, which caused him so much distress that he vomited poison and howled with grief. Eventually, he was returned to his home. So,
of all the mythological creatures, he's my favorite.
He is. And then, you know, you have Harry Potter that paints him in a very, you know, wondrous light.
Right.
And he's fluffy.
Nah.
So in Eastern folklore, specifically in China, a huge black demon dog named Tiangu is blamed for causing eclipses by eating the sun or the moon. In Japan, a wolf-like demon called Okuri Inu is said to follow men and women who travel by night. If the traveler has a worthy heart, the Okuri Inu will protect him from other monsters. However, if the traveler displays cowardice or clumsiness, the hound will devour him.
Well, that kind of escalated quickly.
Yes. And now we're on to English folklore. England is haunted by more hellhounds than any other country. Damn you, Crowley. Anyways. From bustling coastal towns to lonely estates on the moor, each region has its own incarnation of the hound. The Bargest belongs to the Yorkshire area in northern England. He has steeple to fall through the roof.
Interesting.
Okay, so I don't know how to say that. So we're going to say this one belongs in Wales.
Yeah?
Yeah, because it's...
Give it a shot.
No. Mm-mm. Like, I almost want to use Google Translate to have it pronounce it.
Do it.
Oh, God.
There you go.
There you go. Okay, so that belongs to Wales. Unlike other hellhounds who generally travel alone, they travel with a collection of other supernatural characters called the Wild Hunt. When they aren't joining in the sport of the Wild Hunt, they spend their time guiding lost souls to the other world, a paradise that can be reached after death.
I think I've heard of that, the Wild Hunt thing.
Uh-huh.
I think. But, fuck, what other podcast covered it? I think it was Morbid. And they're like part of a group of fairies that like have a certain path that they go through, and like if your house is in it, you just have to open up the doors and windows and Let them do their thing.
Oh. Okay. So, it says, across Central, Western, and Northern Europe, the wild hunt is a well-known folk myth of a ghostly leader and his group of hunters and hounds flying through the cold night sky, accompanied by the sounds of the howling wind. The supernatural hunters are recounted as either the dead or, in some instances, fairies. In the Northern tradition, the wild hunt is synonymous with the great winter storms and changes of the season.
So I actually write?
You are.
Holy shit.
Practitioners of magic may have sought to join the berserkers in spirit while their bodies remain safely at home. So, yeah, you... You're right, for the most part. But I'm also not going to, like, read all of it.
No.
So, the Yes Hound belongs to Devon. Like some other bearers of death, this hound is headless. He rarely interacts with humans, but his wailing cry can be heard by night travelers and frequently interpreted as an omen of death. The Black Dog of Bowley belongs to England's Channel Islands. It is one of the fastest, or it is the fastest of all hellhounds, and it likes to terrify travelers by galloping in circles around them. That was totally in
a kind of rude.
Just saying. Sometimes this monstrous beast can run so fast that it actually creates a storm. This hound is known to wear a broken chain draped around its body, but no explanation of this chain has been given. So, moving on to Scandinavian folklore. In early Norse culture, the god Odin was said to have been one or two monstrous wolves who helped protect him from danger. In one epic poem, Odin rides to Hel, the Viking underworld, and encounters a hound there who may be guarding the entryway. It is believed that Odin's wolves, or these hounds, may have inspired many of England's stories about hellhounds. Long after the Vikings had passed into the pages of history, Scandinavia continued to be hunted by church grims. These spectral black dogs guard the churches where they live, protecting it from evil spirits who might try to invade the sacred ground. Now, we're on to Native American folklore. The indigenous people of Mexico and Central America have many legends about the Cadejo, a spirit dog that is often seen by travelers, especially at night. Cadejos come in two colors. The white spirits are benevolent and will protect travelers from harm, but the black spirits are evil and will kill travelers if they have the chance.
Oh.
Both versions of this hound have goat hooves and sometimes horns. They also have a unique gift. They can speak with humans. However, if you listen to them, you will probably go insane.
See, that's a trade, because I would like to do that, in theory. But I also don't want to go insane.
Right. But the other thing that reminds me of, with the whole Native American folklore part of it, skinwalkers.
Why does everything come back to skinwalkers?
I don't know.
Literally everything.
I mean, it's just a possibility. I'm not sure. But modern incarnations of the hellhound, such as being written into books, like The Hound of Baskervilles by Arthur Conan Doyle, being in the Percy Jackson books, even... like Harry Potter, Sirius Black.
Yeah.
He's technically, as much as I hate to say it, he could technically be considered a hellhound. Because he's a shapeshifter. But hellhounds are also popular characters in TV shows such as Supernatural.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not mistaken, I think they made an appearance at one point in Buffy. And there was a couple episodes of Lost Girl from Sci-Fi. I'm sure there's other shows, but they're even in popular video games like Call of Duty and Final Fantasy.
Sure.
So, you wouldn't know because you're not a nerd. I'm sorry. I mean, you're a nerd. You just live under a rock. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's all I got.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I made it in one chunk.
That never fucking happened.
No.
Couldn't do that again if I tried. No,
definitely. Well, here's a nice short one for you since last week we went on for 2 hours about nothing.
Yeah. It wasn't about nothing. It was just a lot of me talking and it was a lot.
A lot. Well.
Oh, man. Well. You can find us on Facebook at 10-0 True Crime and Paranormal Stories from Behind the Headset. You can find us on Twitter at 10 Paranormal because it won't let Maria change it. You can find us on Instagram at 10_0_podcast.
There you go.
We have an email that you can find in every bio that we have. Or it is 10podcast@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
And you can send us all of your listener stories or stories that you think we should cover. We have a Patreon if you're feeling generous. And we have 4 levels of goodies. We also have our website where you can find all of our stickers and our decals if you'd like to purchase those. We will be running a contest for when we hit 250 followers on Facebook and Instagram, and that is for a custom Tumblr. And I say custom very loosely because the only thing that you get to do is personalize it, I guess. We pick the colors of the tumbler, and you can choose glittered or not. Just keep in mind it might take a little longer because I can't work with epoxy while I'm pregnant.
And I don't know what I'm doing with epoxy. So,
so if you choose to go the glitter route, I will probably have to make it after I have the little munchkin.
The parasite.
Yes, the parasite.
The tapeworm.
Well, I mean, I've lost 12 pounds already, so.
Well, there you go. It's just a giant tapeworm.
And if we hit 250 on Twitter as well, we will be doing a limited edition. There's only 2 in existence right now. Hoodie giveaway. So, yeah.
Make sure you follow us on all of our platforms so we can get that going.
Yes.
If you're also feeling awesome and if you'd like us, make sure you leave us a review on whatever platform you listen to us on so we can start getting a bigger fan base.
Yeah. And with that being said, stay safe.
And try not to become the next 10-0.